The Volume.
This is Prime Cuts, the best of the Colin Cowherd podcast. A very interesting week. Colts head coach Frank Reich lets us behind the curtain a bit on his relationship with Carson Wentz and tells us which Colts player is like nobody he's ever been around before. My buddy and former NFL scout John Middlecoff is money on his fears of an impending disaster for Zach Wilson with the Jets and Rams GM Les Snead on making the Matt Stafford trade and his aggressive approach to free agency and GMing. But first, my top takes of the week. I'm going to always be tied to Baker Mayfield just because of my opinions on him. And listen, like I get, there's a lot of sports fans from Ohio, and they're always interested. Everybody's a tough guy on Twitter, but they always come up and they're very gracious and they're like, hey, what do you think? And I always say the same thing. I don't think he's great. I think he's good. I think he's Kirk Cousins. That's what all my NFL guys think. That's what the, you know, the guy Mike Sando, who does that four-tier quarterback list every year. It's the go-to 50 anonymous executives, and they put Baker Mayfield right next to Kirk Cousins. That is exactly what my scouts and my executive friends always say. He's Kirk Cousins. He can win. He can get to the playoffs. He can win a playoff game. But he's got to be surrounded by extraordinary talent. It's not a criticism. Hell, if you can make the NFL, you're a great talent. But I was thinking about this. You know, it's like Brown fans want me to say that Baker Mayfield's great. But in every business, and he's not, by the way, there is room for somebody who can find tremendous success without being great if they're just good enough. Like in music, to be a lead singer, you do not have to have a great voice. David Lee Roth Van Halen, Mick Jagger Stones, Vince Neil Motley Crue, they do not have a great voice. In movies, to be a leading man, you do not have to be a great actor. Keanu Reeves and Vin Diesel. Steven Seagal for a decade was a leading man. In the NFL, there is a great history of good enough. Ken Stabler, Joe Flacco, Jim McMahon. They've all won Super Bowls by being good enough. When Seattle lost its NBA team, I blame the owner, Howard Schultz. He's a billionaire. He bought the Sonics, and he didn't have the stomach for it. He never really fought for any duration to keep the Sonics once they clearly needed a new arena, and they did. I'd been to Key Arena multiple times, a dozen times, bad parking, downtown Seattle during the NBA season. The winter is dark, poorly lit, wet, damp. They should have gone to the Burbs, go to Kirkland, go somewhere, better NBA arena. But Howard Schultz was cheap. If you're going to get into owning a team, then get into it emotionally and fight for it. When the Chargers left San Diego, I didn't necessarily bash Dean Spanos. He has no intention of selling the team. He's owned the team forever. He loves the team, and he fought his ass off to keep it in San Diego. But local politicians are, how can I say this, mostly untalented hacks. And in Cleveland, this is why the Browns left. Because the less popular baseball team got a new stadium, and the more popular football team playing in a dump did not. So they left. In San Diego, Qualcomm was falling apart. They didn't have the same day revenue of the top 10 teams in the league. They didn't have enough suites. It was hard to get in and out of. I've been to Qualcomm 50 times in my life. The Padres and Chargers both played there. But what do you know? The Padres got a new baseball stadium. And the more popular NFL team had a site picked, the Spanos family fought forever for it. And then it came down to a vote, and the vote was a tourist tax, meaning locals didn't really have to foot most of the bill. It would be people like me who rent a car and stay in a San Diego hotel every couple years. Vegas has a big tourist tax, 36% if I recall. The local politicians didn't fight for it, and it failed. And the Spanos family, who's not going to sell the team, who loves the team, who's had it forever, said, okay, what are our options? LA came knocking, the fifth biggest economy in the world, a wildly dynamic sports market, a pretty sweet deal with the Rams. They would never get it again, or stay in San Diego, cross your fingers that you can get a stadium. You tell me what businessman would pass on that. They didn't want to move the team anywhere else. But when your neighbor, your wealthy neighbor, 2-hour drive north says, Here's a sweet deal. Come on up. And the reason I bring this up, because the Chargers now have now blown past their season ticket average in San Diego the last 20 years. Yep, it's officially now the fastest growing season ticket sale base in the entire league. They're at 90%. I'm a business guy. You followed my career. Somebody comes knocking, offers you significantly more, and the place you're at's falling apart. What are my options? To die? Go ask any businessman. You have to adapt or die. And so I'm happy for the Chargers. And I'm not going to take the wildly popular side of, what about the common man? Well, the problem, the common man is represented by the common local politicians, and they mostly stink. There are just certain truths that people don't want to hear. Like, parents don't want to hear their kids' friends are going to have more influence on their kids than they will. They did a study back in 2015 that found that young teenagers, 12 to 14, will listen to their peers more than their parents. The kids were asked to rate dangerous activities like bungee jumping or biking without a helmet. Then they were told how adults rated those activities and how their peers rated that activity. Then they were asked to rate those activities again, and their scores were swayed more by their peers than their adults. Here's another truth. Melo's got no self-awareness. He's a Hall of Fame guy for one thing, shooting two-pointers. Melo lacked so much willingness to be a good teammate that as one of the great mid-range forward shooters of all time, he wouldn't take an extra step back and make it a three. He wouldn't defend. Jeremy Lin wouldn't play with him. He just didn't get it. He will make the Basketball Hall of Fame for one thing, shooting twos. Totally selfish, absolute ball hog, never in great shape. Close your eyes right now and imagine Melo playing basketball. Odds are he's shooting a long two, probably from the right side of the court. It's burned into your memory. It's mostly all he did. Well, Frank, I've had everybody on from your organization. It's about time. I've had Jim Irsay and Chris Ballard and multiple players and Darius Leonard, so it's great to have you. So when you go back to Carson's relationship with you initially, was it connect at first sight? Did it take time? What was the breakthrough, the epiphany that you're like, he trusted you, you trusted him in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, it was on every level. You know, there's been a lot of talk that, you know, spiritually we kind of, you know, connect there. That's true. But it, and that's important. And I think that's a big part of why we connect. But from a football standpoint, I can't emphasize to you enough how much we connect, just X's and O's, the way we see the game, the way we see the passing game, the way we see protections, the way we, the philosophy of how to play quarterback. You know, this is just one of those guys that as soon as I started talking to him, it was like, oh, wow. Yeah, we're totally got the same vibe, the same wavelength about how to play this most important of position. And, you know, for me, that's come from being around a lot of great ones and playing the game myself and at that position. Not that I was ever at that level, but I've been around a lot of great ones. And I get excited about when I get around a guy like Carson, who I think thinks like those guys.
You know, it's funny. In golf, they call it the yips. We just saw this Olympian, Simone Biles. They call it the twisties, where you just you get in the air and you're like, I've lost my confidence. You know, we know basketball players. They get in the zone. They get out of the zone. But in football, we also know in baseball, I can remember Steve Sachs struggled making the throw second to first. It happens. Like, we all get it. In football, we just think, oh, these guys just, these quarterbacks drop back. And it's like, no. No, there's anxiety. Last year with Carson Wentz, there were moments and I thought, oh, shit, he's got a little bit of the golfer yips here on stuff out in the flat, like just easy stuff for him. And he was a little broken. And then the stories come out that, you know, it was not a great situation for Doug Peterson, for everybody involved. How do you – I don't know how often you've dealt with it. How do you – get him back in the right tunnel, in the right lane? We get with every other sport. We get that you can get off out of a zone. How do you get him back?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great point you're making. And those examples are great examples. You know, most of those examples are a little bit more, not individual, you know, like the Simone Biles, that's an individual sport, the the throw to first base. You know, that's kind of a one aspect of a deal where, you know, I think what we're talking about here, a little bit what I think you're alluding to, is a guy losing confidence and, you know, getting out of his rhythm. And that certainly was said last year. The thing about playing quarterback is you're so dependent on so many other people. And so, you know, the way to get it back is, first of all, the change of environment. So, you know, sometimes a change of environment is a good thing. And, you know, we all know that what Doug Peterson did in Philadelphia and helping that and leading that team and organization to a world championship, he obviously put together a world-class environment. But then over sometimes things change and people change and it just doesn't, things go south for whatever the reasons are. And it was just the right time, I think, for the change for Carson. And I think the culture here and the team and the roster here is just built for, he's the right piece to plug in for us. I think he feels that. I even think this area of the country is a guy from North Dakota. So, you know, even in the Midwest, even though I think Carson did a great job of connecting with the Philly fans and becoming part of that city, I think this is a natural home to him. And then as far as a player, Colin, you know, you just go back to the basics. We go back to ground up. And I've said here in the media that I don't like to think that he was broken. It's just a question of resetting, refocusing, put him in the right environment, and just go through that process day by day. And I'm expecting big things.
Your opening schedule is, to be diplomatic, brutal. I mean, you guys got no breaks in your first 5 weeks. I do think you can win the division and not have Carson Wentz around for a month. I do. I think you're really well coached. I think you have great line play. Some of that drafting, some trades, some just development, but both lines are really solid. Jonathan Taylor, end of the year, Michael Pittman, really, you know, you really saw stars emerging. I could also make an argument, as good as you are, Frank, you go 1-5 or, you know, 1-4 in this league. It is hard to get back. Is it possible? Jacob Eason, Sam Ellinger, young guys, don't have a lot of reps, that maybe the answer is not currently in camp and somebody coming outside in may very well, based on the difficulty of schedule, may be the answer.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, yeah, it's a legitimate question. I mean, it's a question you have to, I mean, you can't ignore that question. So, and it's not being ignored. But, you know, we have to have a maturity here and a perspective here that we can do that. We can keep our head down with the guys that we got and feel confident the guys that we got. You know, I understand that Chris Ballard as a GM, he can have that perspective and be thinking. And we're, of course, have those conversations. But 99% of what I'm thinking is, you know, our roster is our roster. Let's get these guys ready to play. And then secondly, I mean, I'm hoping the best with Carson. We're not eliminating the possibility of him playing week one. We're still a long way from there, not even close to making that determination. But, you know, there's still a chance. So we'll just stay the course here. Chris and I will have the appropriate conversations at the appropriate time. But we're not there yet.
There's a reason FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is really easy to use. Great odds on all different betting markets. Unique, fun bet types like same game parlay. That's the best thing they have, in my opinion. Same game parlays. And always on promotions let you get more out of every game action. And if you win on FanDuel, they pay you in as little as 24 hours. In addition to the parlay insurance. If you haven't tried FanDuel Sportsbook yet, new users can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, new users, $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up with the promo code Colin to get in on the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Colin. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required, $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, and 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey. Darius Leonard got picked, and I went back knowing that you were going to be on. And there were people like, who's Darius Leonard? This isn't a great pick. And then literally immediately, I went back when he arrived with the Colts. And, you know, the early reviews are, oh, good Lord, this guy is incredible. When you make the pick, you obviously had seen him. You talked to Ballard. But go back to the first, like a practice with a Darius Leonard, and you're just like, now you don't want to tell him. You don't want to shout it. But you whisper to somebody, oh, what did we get our hands on here?
Yeah, it was immediate because of two things. You know, one, like he steps out on the field, and really it's not just on the field, it's anywhere. And he just had this guy. We talk about juice and energy. Nobody has it like Darius, okay? Nobody. I've never been around anybody like this guy. He steps on the field and the whole field lights up. I mean, he has that much juice and love and passion for the game that I know we all do, but he just got a way about him that is special. And then secondly, you know, yes, he's physically talented. There's a lot of guys physically talented, but he's got that gift of seeing a play happen before it happens, you know, like knowing what's going to happen. And he's there. And then he has the length and the attitude to finish plays. And the great thing about Darius is he's proven it in the 3 years that he's been here. Well, what I mean, it's not just making a million tackles. It's causing fumbles, recovering fumbles, making interceptions, and sacking the quarterback. He does everything. I mean, he can make plays at every level, and he makes them consistently, and he's done that for 3 straight years.
Former NFL scout, my buddy John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast. He's a rock star. A lot of stuff to talk about. I took a 4-day siesta to Park City, which was amazing. All right, let's start with this. Calvin Johnson didn't thank the Lions. I was okay with it in his Hall of Fame speech. If you've ever worked for a lousy company, I don't think just because you've employed me at one point, I have spent a lot of time giving you kudos. I also thought Peyton Manning saying he's not done with the game, he wants to be part of the growth, was cool. And I also thought, John, you know, one of the things, this sounds probably corny, but I think it's pretty remarkable that Peyton Manning's arch rival, Tom Brady, is a couple of rows back. And I thought to myself, that is fantastic. Not everybody has to hate everybody. Not everybody has to be Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas. I loved it. And, you know, my takeaway was all these things were really emotional and fantastic, but I'm going to take Calvin Johnson's side. And I really love that Peyton Manning is all in. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be part of this league for a long time. Just your thoughts overall the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky enough, you know, working in football before I got into doing this. And I've always believed that the highest level people in that profession, college and pros, would be the highest level people in society. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, John Lynch, what could John Lynch not have done if he hadn't made it in the NFL, right? Peyton's the same way. Now, they had Hall of Fame careers, but you've been around John Lynch. I mean, is there a higher level guy around? You know, I mean,
he just smart and adaptable.
Yeah, and Peyton's just a unique. I've always believed this and been saying this for a long time. I think that for the internet age, that Peyton and Tom were the Magic and Larry of, you know, a football, taking it to another stratosphere. Now, where the analogy gets weird, Tom also morphed into Michael Jordan, so he kind of played both roles. But Peyton is a very unique personality. And did you see the story? I know you detached from social media. The Lions had offered Calvin Johnson $500,000. To become a part of his organization. And he said no. And I saw a lot of people on the internet making a big deal. $500,000. He's the second most famous player in the history of the franchise. Like, this is the franchise. They just got $300 million of their media rights bill. Like, if you want to get Calvin Johnson, who made, I think, like $150 million in his career, who has a thriving weed business now, like, you got to offer a little bit more than that. Like, that to me is on the line. It's just a low-level franchise. Yes. I'm with you. It's really remarkable. I was thinking about this. I talked about it on the 3 and Out. Like, Peyton Lynch and Charles Woodson are good examples of three. I mean, Charles and Peyton are all-time talents. John had to be kind of put in the right situation. But even Peyton Manning, who's viewed as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, a lot of stuff was out of his control. Right? He was lucky he got drafted to a team with a Hall of Fame general manager who already had Marvin Harrison. The following year, that GM passed on Ricky Williams, drafted Edgerrin James, who also went into the Hall of Fame that year. Peyton really benefited a lot from Indy's structure. They got Tony Dungy when he got fired. Like, he's an all-time grinder worker and controlling what he could control. There's probably never – Brady kind of copied Peyton the second half of his career, but Peyton benefited a lot from those people. Same with Charles. Like, he couldn't – you know, the Raiders let him go. He ends up with Green Bay thinking he's getting with Favre. It turns into Rodgers. They win the Super Bowl. He's the defensive player of the year. I thought it was just a great – Sunday night was pretty special, the lineup of guys that they threw out there. Big night for the NFL.
All right, tell me, is there you know, we've got – camp news every other day. There's something that jumps out. Is there a story to you that's underreported, or a story you're interested in?
Yeah, I got something. The Jets had a, you know, a scrimmage, you know, thing at MetLife on Saturday, and Zach Wilson was terrible. And seeing and listen, the media and the fans are just going to react to the media and the mock drafts. So when a guy gets drafted too high or too low, their anger is based on what they've read or what they've seen. And maybe some of these really famous guys, they've watched them play. But we got to the point last year going in, like Brian Flores and Chris Greer with the Dolphins. Whether everyone loved the Tua pick or not, it doesn't matter. It's their job to get it right. That's their only job, is to pick the right player. Not who's going to give them the best draft grades or not. The Jets just, it felt like, just locked into Zach Wilson from right after the season.
They did.
Listen. I'm out there with Trey Lance. I didn't know that much about him. Like most people at North Dakota State, I'd never seen him play. But by the time the draft process happens, you get to go meet him and see him. And how could you walk around this guy, or even watching Justin Fields at some Bears practice, and just be like, we have to take... It'd be one thing if he was coming from Alabama, right? Zach Wilson. He was at BYU in a corona year where they weren't playing anyone. And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to like write his career resume right now, but he's not as physically talented as Trey Lance or Justin Fields. And to just think, now, and I don't know, maybe the Niners would have taken Zach Wilson over Trey Lance. I don't know. I don't have that information right now. I'm sure we're going to find out as years come if one of them doesn't turn out to be very good. That seems kind of crazy. That's something just to keep an eye on. Because I know this, that guy with Kyle's more than likely going to be pretty good. And Zach Wilson, turnover in New York, the pressure in New York, guy, lifetime Utah guy going out there, huge jump up, a lot going on. The Jets have a first-time coordinator, a first-time head coach. Someone told me this, because one thing Zach Wilson has was like some cockiness, and that turns people off. But Joe Douglas is a Baltimore Raven guy, and they kind of like that, right? They had been around Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. They kind of eat that up. And someone, I was like, he's really going to like Zach Wilson? He's like, yeah, they're going to like, he's going to like kind of his arrogance. And just when he walks in the room, he thinks he belongs. But you also have to have the talent to go around with that. I'm not saying he's not talented, but no way he's as physically gifted as the Bears and the Niners guy. He's just not. So, and that market, man, and you know, you've lived in the Northeast, it is intense. So you better dial. This could be a long season. They just might not be that talented this year, right? So can you battle through the adversity? I don't know.
Well, it's not a good ownership group with the Jets. You also have arguably the best defensive coach in league history in Belichick, the best young defensive coach in Sean McDermott, the second best young defensive coach in Brian Flores. So I've said this before. There's nobody, including Tom Brady or Montana, when you talk about the great quarterbacks, there's nobody that had a shitty coach. I got nothing against Robert Saleh, but there is no way for the next 2 years he is not the fourth best coach in that division. That's what impossible. He is with the worst supporting roster Zach Wilson has. So I think I've said this every year. There's a kid and I have my doubts. I don't think the Zach Wilson thing's going to work. I don't.
Yeah. I think it's going to be very, very difficult. I really do. And again, it's just social media clips. It sure looks like Sam. Like, could they have just rolled with Sam and traded that for a bounty and got a bunch of stuff and kind of built up their team fast? And they had a guy. Like, what are the chances that Zach Wilson is more talented than Sam Darnold?
Well, he's not as big. He's not as strong.
And there were guys, reports in the building, that I think some of the coaches were like, let's just take this guy and trade. But the GM and the new head coach always want their young guy, buys you a little more time. But that's just one of those situations, Colin. It feels like something to monitor. That's all I'm going to say, something to monitor.
So let's bring in Les Snead, Rams GM now for 9 years, made the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years with a Super Bowl appearance. He was a Falcons director of player personnel, Falcons scout, Jag scout. New York Daily News called him football's most interesting GM. Certainly qualifies as that. So let's start with this. Are you as aggressive in other areas of your life as you are as a GM when you play golf? Do you never lay up? Is that your personality, or is it just work as a football GM? Because you're seen as very aggressive.
Excellent question. So let's take golf. I'll answer it this way. Golf, I might be. Why not? If I get a chance to play Augusta, why not go for the green and two? I have nothing to lose. Maybe you're one shot playing Augusta, right? Let's take real life. I'm not going to go skydiving. I have no interest in bungee jumping off a high bridge or what have you. So,
right.
Let's take it investing. If I'm not an expert, I'll probably be conservative and maybe listen to some advisors and things like that. So I think that to sum it up is in our business, I do think it's a very competitive business. If Peter Thiel once said, competition is for losers, you don't want to get in the NFL. So at what point do you have to make an aggressive move, take a risk to with the bet of maybe gaining an edge on the 31 other competitors in this league?
And you're on pace to go 7 years without a first round pick. And I've always had, it's sort of a Malcolm Gladwell take, but I thought I mentioned this about 5 years ago, is that all these players are of high risk. And the feeling is there's always about 15 guys in the first round who are, if not can't miss, they're physically different. They're just special players. They're receivers that separate. They're Chase Young. They're Trevor Lawrence. You know, unless barring an injury, it's hard to see him missing. After that, from about the 16th or 17th pick in the first round, to late second, I feel like there's not a huge gap with players. It's more about if the system's good and they're coachable, they're going to be good players. So my theory's always been, I would always trade a first-round pick for a Jalen Ramsey or a Jamal Adams. I don't have a problem with it. Is that kind of your theory, the Malcolm Gladwell, that for the money, you're really better off starting in the second round and having 2 seconds over one first, and that's where the value is?
Very similar to our philosophy. And you mentioned Chase Young. I don't know if there's 15 of him, and I don't think you meant that, right? So there is even a cutoff after Chase Young. But, yes, when – And it's the formula is this: if we're in this phase of contending, of having winning seasons, your probability of picking, let's call it top 10, is low, barring any catastrophe, and you can use 2 first round picks to maybe go get a top 5 pick like a Jalen Ramsey, who has already lived up to top 5 potential. There's now the guesswork is out of it, the projections out of it, the development's out of it. And if that player can help our team, we'll probably do it a lot. And we'll try to make up for the rest, right, in the back end of the draft, whether it's trading back to acquire more picks in the second, third, fourth, fifth round and using the acquisition mechanisms as creative as possible.
So I speculated throughout the year. I said, I had said on the air, I said, McVay has lost trust in Goff. I just sense it. And it was a San Francisco game. I think it was up there. And I said, this isn't going to work, guys. There's a problem now. And you're an aggressive GM. Sean's an aggressive coach. And this is not a shot at Jared, but between Russell Wilson twice a year and Kyle Shanahan twice a year, you can't stand pat. Everything. You guys have to be moving. And so at some point, you guys decide, the Goff fit, we're going to make a move. Do you remember the conversation, the epiphany, the moment when you just sat down and said, okay, this kid got to the Super Bowl 2 years earlier. This is going to make news. We're going to have to give up some picks. Take me to that place for you, Les, that moment when you just said, it's a big swing. I'm going for it.
Well, I think it was probably sometime after, but the opportunity presented itself, right, where we had a chance to acquire a quarterback with elite skills, and Jared has some elite QB skills, but also a quarterback, right, that has unique experience. And the unique part of it would be, I hate throwing that word around, but in Matt's case, take the skill out, take the production out, right? Throwing for a lot of touchdowns, a lot of yards, a lot of comebacks, all of those things. The unique part of the experience was, okay, Matt's been running a pro-style offense probably since Pee Wee football. And he did it in junior high, high school. He did it at Georgia under Mark Richey. So it was that moment where, wow, there's an opportunity where there's an elite QB with this experience that now meshes with Sean, and let's call it meshes where we were at in the window, where a lot of our skill are in their prime, a lot of our defenders in their prime. This might be an opportunity we can't pass. And the thing, and now there's a human involved. Jared Goff's a great human being, and he might can get to where Matt's at. That's just going to take time that Matt had and he didn't. And it's a very, very tough decision when you do that. But the thing that I can say is, because of Jared and because of what he did for us and helped us get to this point, it enabled someone like Matt to say, you know what, I'd like to be a part of the Rams. Right. If we didn't have Jared Goff and he didn't help us have the success we had, Matt could have easily said to Detroit, because he had options and Detroit had options. And we all wanted Matt. But hey, I would rather go to the Rams because they're more ready to win than maybe team B, C, or D. And Jared had a lot to do with that, which is, I guess, ironic. And what is what makes this business extremely tough when you have to make those type phone calls and decisions.
That wraps it up for the week. We're heading into another big week here at The Volume. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram.
The Volume.